All right, so today we're going deep on a Supreme Court case that should get any environmental lawyer's attention.
Definitely.
Robertson v. Seattle, Audubon Society. It's a real showdown, you know, environmentalists versus the timber industry.
Yeah, and with Congress kind of jumping right into the middle of it.
Exactly, trying to rewrite the rules of the game while the whole fight's going on.
It's fascinating how this case really digs into the whole idea of how much power Congress actually has.
Right.
And how that power kind of runs up against what the courts are supposed to be doing, you know, interpreting and applying the law.
Yeah, that classic separation of powers concept.
Yeah.
But with a real twist.
Absolutely.
So let's paint a picture for everyone. It's the 1990s. We're talking about those ancient forests in the Pacific Northwest.
Right.
And lawsuits are flying everywhere over how the federal government's managing timber harvesting.
Mm-hmm.
What were the legal tools that were being used in this whole battle?
Well, you can think of it this way. You've got like five major environmental laws that are all in play here. The National Forest Management Act, the Endangered Species Act, those are the big ones.
Right.
But then you've also got the Wild and Scenic Rivers Act,
uh-huh.
the National Environmental Policy Act, and the Migratory Bird Treaty Act.
Wow. So a lot of different angles.
Exactly. Each of these laws is setting up, you know, different rules and protections, all aimed at managing natural resources and preventing harm to the environment.
So basically, all these lawsuits are saying that the federal government's policies on timber are breaking one or more of these laws.
Exactly. It's a very complex web of regulations.
That sounds like it.
And then right as these lawsuits are heating up,
mm-hmm.
Congress steps in and tries to cool things down with this new law called the Northwest Timber Compromise.
Okay.
It's an attempt to find that balance between protecting these incredible old growth forests
right.
and the economic needs of the logging industry, you know, which relies on timber harvesting.
So it's almost like somebody just yelled time out in the middle of the game and tried to change the rules.
Right. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals wasn't too happy about it.
Yeah. So they weren't really having it, were they?
Not really. They looked at a key part of this new law, Section 318B6A.
Okay.
And basically said, whoa, Congress, you can't just come in here and tell us how these lawsuits have to end. That's the court's job.
Right.
They saw it as a real violation of the separation of powers.
So break down this separation of powers idea for me. What was the Ninth Circuit really worried about?
They were worried that Congress was overstepping its boundaries by trying to micromanage these legal battles that were already happening.
Okay.
The separation of powers is all about making sure each branch of government, you know, the legislative, executive, and judicial,
mm-hmm.
that they all have their own roles and that no one branch gets too much power.
So they thought Congress was trying to act like a judge instead of a lawmaker.
That's the gist of it.
Yeah.
They said this part of the law was unconstitutional because it tried to directly control what happened in these cases. Without actually changing the underlying environmental laws themselves.
So they were trying to tell the courts how to understand and use those laws, which is supposed to be the court's job.
Right.
But then the Supreme Court steps in and they have a totally different take on it.
Yeah.
This is where Robertson v. Seattle Audubon Society really comes into the picture.
Exactly. The Supreme Court took on the case to figure out if Congress had really gone too far. You know, they had to grapple with this question.
Yeah.
Could Congress cross the line from actually making laws to interfering with how the courts do their job?
And surprisingly, the Supreme Court sides with Congress unanimously.
They did. They looked at Section 318B6 and decided it didn't actually overstep any boundaries.
Okay.
They said it actually changed the environmental laws themselves.
Interesting.
Instead of telling the courts how to rule in those specific lawsuits that were already going on.
So instead of saying you have to rule for the timber industry, they were saying, here's a new set of rules.
Mm-hmm.
Now go apply them to these cases.
Exactly. And that's a great way to put it. And the Supreme Court really emphasized that this section of the law didn't force the courts to make any particular factual findings.
Okay.
It didn't say, you must find that this timber sale is okay, or you must find that this owl habitat is protected enough.
Right.
It just changed the legal standards that the courts had to consider.
So they could swap out the rule book.
Yes.
But they couldn't tell the referee what calls to make on the field.
That's a great analogy.
Pretty important difference.
Absolutely vital. It goes right back to that balance of power we were talking about.
Okay, so I'm following you. But to really get why the Supreme Court decided the way they did,
mm-hmm.
we need to dig into the actual law itself.
Right.
What exactly did Section 318 say, and how did the court interpret those words?
Let's get into that. So we left off with the Supreme Court saying Congress was allowed to actually change the environmental laws in these timber lawsuits, even though those lawsuits were already going on.
Right. And they made it clear that this power isn't like a free pass for Congress to mess with the courts whenever they want.
Yeah, they were careful about that.
You can't just go changing the law in the middle of a case because you don't like how it's going.
Right.
The Supreme Court actually compared Robertson to another case about Congress overreaching United States v. Klein. It goes way back to 1871.
Oh, yeah, Klein. That's one of those cases every law student knows because it really sets the boundaries between the branches of government.
So Klein is about Congress trying to pull some strings during the Civil War era. What happened there?
Okay, so in Klein, you've got Congress passing this law that basically tells the courts how they have to interpret presidential pardons in cases related to the Civil War.
Hmm.
They basically said that even if someone got a pardon from the president, the courts couldn't use that pardon as evidence that the person hadn't actually been part of the rebellion.
So Congress was saying, even with a pardon, you can't assume they were innocent. They were trying to control how the courts looked at evidence.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And that's what the Supreme Court had a problem with. They said Congress was going too far by making a special rule for how these cases should be decided without actually changing the law about presidential pardons.
So the court in Klein drew a line and said, you can't tell us how to evaluate evidence.
Right.
But in Robertson, they said it is okay for Congress to change the laws themselves, even if it affects current cases.
Right.
There's like a pretty big difference there.
You got it. That's the key difference the Supreme Court focused on in Robertson when they explained why this case wasn't like Klein.
Okay.
They said Congress wasn't trying to manipulate how the courts use the old laws. They were putting brand new laws in place.
So it's like saying you can rewrite the recipe, but you can't tell the chef how to bake the cake.
Uh-huh. I like that analogy.
It really gets to the point.
Yeah. Congress has a lot of power to change the legal landscape.
Right.
They can pass laws that have a huge impact on all sorts of cases.
Yeah.
But they can't just walk into a courtroom and tell the judge, this is how you have to rule.
That wouldn't really work with our judicial system, would it?
No, it would completely undermine the whole idea of judicial independence, which is like one of the foundations of our democracy.
Makes sense. So back to Robertson.
Yeah.
What happened to all those lawsuits about the timber policies after the Supreme Court made their decision?
Well, remember that Section 318 of the Northwest Timber Compromise basically replaced the requirements from those five different environmental laws with just two new provisions.
Right.
So the case went back to the lower courts, and they had to look at everything again based on these new standards.
So Congress shifting the legal goalposts like that really mixed things up.
Yeah, neither side could just automatically claim victory anymore.
Right.
The whole game had changed, and everyone had to come up with new strategies.
Oh.
But here's where it gets a little tricky. The Supreme Court said Congress could make these changes, but they didn't actually say whether those two new provisions were enough to actually protect the spotted owl and the old growth forests.
So the fight wasn't really over. It just kept going. But on this new playing field that Congress had created.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And the big question was, did this Northwest Timber Compromise actually get the balance right?
Yeah.
Did it do enough for the environment and for timber industry?
So even when the Supreme Court settles a legal issue, it doesn't always mean there's a clear winner in terms of policy.
That's right.
There's still a lot of debate about how these laws get put into practice and how well they actually work.
Exactly. It reminds us that winning in court doesn't always mean you win in the real world.
Right.
And Robertson is a perfect example of how complicated these battles can be, especially with environmental law, where there's so many different people and interests involved.
Okay, so we've talked about a lot, but let's switch gears a little and talk about what Robertson v. Seattle Audubon Society means for the future.
Yeah.
How does this case still affect environmental law today?
Well, on a practical level, Robertson gives us a model for how Congress can change environmental laws even when there are lawsuits happening without messing with the judicial branch.
Like a how to change laws without causing a constitutional crisis 101.
Uh-huh, exactly. But it's also more than that. Robertson reminds us that environmental law is always changing.
Uh-huh.
It's where science, economics, and politics all come together, and the legal battles can go on forever with all sorts of twists and turns.
So it's not just lawyers arguing about ideas. These cases really affect our environment industries and people's lives.
Exactly. And I think Robertson also shows how important it is to really understand the details of how laws are interpreted, especially in a field as complicated as environmental law.
Right.
Even small changes to the words of a law can have a huge impact on how it's used and enforced.
It sounds like Robertson v. Seattle Audubon Society is something everyone should read if they want to understand how environmental law works in the real world.
I agree.
It's a case that shows how the law is constantly being shaped and reshaped by everything around it.
And it's a case that shows how the Supreme Court deals with these really basic questions about how our government works and where the lines are drawn between the different branches.
You know, this has been a really interesting discussion.
It has.
But before we finish up, I have one more question for you.
Okay.
If Congress can change the rules during the game, does that mean they could basically control how any case turns out? Where do we draw the line between legitimate legislative action and messing with the courts?
Yeah, that's the big question, isn't it? And it's one that legal scholars and courts are still trying to figure out. The Supreme Court has given us some clues in cases like Robertson, but it's definitely a tricky area with a lot of gray areas.
So it's not as easy as saying Congress can change the law, but they can't tell the courts what to do. There's more to it than that.
Exactly. The Supreme Court has been pretty clear that Congress can't pass laws that say exactly how a specific case should turn out.
Right. Like United States v. Klein.
Yeah, that's a perfect example of what not to do.
Right.
But when it comes to actually changing existing laws or making new ones, even if those changes might affect lawsuits that are already happening, Congress has more wiggle room.
So in Robertson, the Supreme Court was fine with Congress changing the rules of the game.
Right.
But they wouldn't have been okay with Congress picking the winner.
That's a good way to think about it.
Right.
And the key is whether Congress is trying to take over the court's job. Are they trying to decide the case themselves? Or are they setting up a new legal framework that the courts can then use?
So let's say Congress passed a law that said all the lawsuits about timber harvesting in the Pacific Northwest are dismissed right now. That would be a problem.
Right. Oh. Yeah, big time. That would be a clear attempt to interfere with the courts, and it would almost definitely be unconstitutional.
Okay, but if they pass a law that changes the rules for how timber harvesting is regulated, that's usually seen as okay even if it affects the outcome of those lawsuits.
Right, because in that case, they're acting like lawmakers, not judges. They're changing the law itself, and then it's up to the courts to interpret and apply that new law to each specific case.
Okay, that makes sense. But how do you figure out where that line is in real life? What are some signs that Congress might be getting too involved in a particular case?
Well, one red flag is if they start trying to control the lawsuit by saying things like what evidence can be used, what legal arguments can be made, or what burden of proof applies.
Okay.
Those are all things that are usually left up to the courts to decide.
So if Congress starts messing with the procedures or the rules about evidence, that's a bad sign.
Definitely. Another warning sign is if the new law is really specific to just one case or a few cases.
I see.
That can make it seem like they're trying to influence that particular lawsuit instead of making a general law.
So it sounds like you really need to look at the context to figure out if Congress has gone too far.
Exactly. The Supreme Court has said that they'll look at the actual words of the law, the legislative history, and everything else that was going on at the time to decide whether Congress was acting within its power.
So Robertson v. Seattle Audubon Society is more than just an interesting case about environmental law and the spotted owl.
It is.
It really gets to the heart of some basic questions about how our government works and how the different branches work together.
Exactly. It shows the tension that's always there between Congress's power to make laws and the court's ability to do their job without interference. It's a balance that we're always trying to get right, especially as new cases come up.
It sounds like Robertson is a case that all lawyers and anyone who's interested in how our government works should know about.
I completely agree. It's a great example of how complicated these issues can be and how important it is to understand the law and how power is shared in our government.
Well, I think we've covered a lot today and given our listeners a lot to think about. This deep dive into Robertson v. Seattle Audubon Society has been really insightful, wouldn't you say?
Absolutely. It's a case with a lot of layers, and it reminds us that the law is always changing to keep up with the world.
Well said. Thanks for joining us for this deep dive. And we'll see you next time on The Deep Dive.